Podplay.
Hej och välkommen till ett nytt samtal om böcker med mig Lisa Tallroth och med en långväga gäst, Shelley Reed från Colorado, delstaten precis mitt i USA som till största delen fylls av de klippiga bergen. Och det är här romanen Dit floden för dig utspelar sig. Go as a river, som den heter i original. And this conversation will be held in English. I'll just give you a short introduction in Swedish first. Så Dit floden för dig, det är en berättelse som kallas måste-läsning för den som älskade Delia Owens, Där kräftorna sjunger. Och det finns absolut likheter i hur den kvinnliga huvudpersonen relaterar till sin plats och till vildmarken. Och hur vi får följa ett livsöde över flera decennier. Men där det i kräftorna sjunger var söderns träskmarker som doftade och levde på sidorna, är det nu den krispiga luften i Colorados Blue Mountains. En vildmark med plötsliga snöfall och ginst som sprakar om våren. Och så den brusande Gunnisonfloden som gör det möjligt att i dalen odla persikor. För det är på en persikofarm som bokens huvudperson Victoria växer upp. Med en sträng pappa och en våldsam bror. Hon är bara 17 år i bokens början när året är 1948 och hon på bygatan råkar på Wilson Moon, en pojke på rymmen. Och det här blir ett möte som kommer att leda till uppvaknande, katastrofer och något oanat stort om frigörelse, förlust och försoning. Och det handlar om att go as a river, följa dit floden för dig. Welcome, Shelley Reed.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So I just tried to give the listener an idea of the setting and the landscape where your novel takes place. Because this is important, right? It is a story about place.
Yes, yes.
Place and peaches. I just need to start with that because I had such a bad craving for peaches when I read your story. And I was a bit surprised, actually, that peaches were able to grow in Colorado. I was expecting to be too cold for that. But the story takes place at a peach farm and you describe the perfect peach. This is, of course, impossible to get hold of in Sweden, especially this time of year. But can you describe it in the book? Can you do it right now?
Well, you know, the setting, as you say, is a crucial component of the book. But the peaches themselves, yes, are a lot of people are actually surprised to hear. Even people in the United States are surprised to hear that we grow some of the most gorgeous, delicious peaches in the world on the western slope of Colorado. There's something about both the soil and the weather that makes for the perfect peach. But it's very difficult to do because peaches are very fragile. They're very sensitive to temperature variations. And so we can fairly frequently have an unexpected frost in Colorado. And so the blossoms are very susceptible to frost. And also as the peach goes on in the season, they get sweeter and sweeter and sweeter because we have warm days and cool nights. And the cooler the nights, the sweeter the peach until it gets a little bit too cold and then the whole crop just goes to mush. And so there's a real art to growing peaches in Colorado. And so I ended up using that as both sort of symbol and metaphor in my book of the idea of growing against the odds, the idea of being able to be resilient in new soil. And we'll talk a little bit about the character Victoria Nash, but one of the central components of the plot of the book is, can she save her ancestral peach farm that means so very much to her and to her family?
And the book starts with a prologue letting us know that the home of the narrator is now lying at the bottom of a lake. You write, mud-bound, its remnants indistinguishable from boat wreckage, Sleek trout troll the remains of my bedroom.
Yes.
And that is a great image.
Yeah, you know, so the setting of the book is in Iola, Colorado. And Iola was a real town before, in the 1960s, it was evacuated and flooded and the Wild River dammed in order to create Blue Mesa Reservoir, which is the largest reservoir in Colorado. And so the novel is immediately on the very first pages. It is about place and also about displacement. And it is, as you say, about home and family. And where we turn when those things are lost, what can and cannot be reclaimed. And so the story of Iola, the setting, the novel is fiction, the characters are fictional, but the setting is a real setting and a real story that had a lot of pain for the people who had farmed and ranched that area of Colorado for generations. And then when the decision was made that the Wild Gunnison River would be dammed and that entire valley floor would be flooded in order to create a reservoir, those people had to leave their homeland. And I am a fifth generation Coloradoan. My family goes back to my great-great-grandparents who homesteaded in Colorado, literally came across in a covered wagon, just like you can imagine in the movies in a way, in a rather inhospitable kind of difficult landscape on the southeastern plains of Colorado. I come from very tough, hardworking people who worked very hard to make a life in Colorado. And so I feel that land and that sense of homeland very deep inside my own being. And so when I was imagining the character of Victoria Nash and the challenges that she might go through, to me, one of the most tragic things that could happen to you is to be forced off of your homeland. And so I started imagining what it was like for the people of Iola to actually have to leave those farms and ranches. And that's kind of the heart of the story. And it is where the prologue places the reader immediately. It's where the story begins.
And the next thing that happens, and this is really in the beginning, is that your character Wilson Moon enters. Yeah. And he's partly an opposite to Victoria when it comes to home.
Yes.
He lacks home,
yes,
right?
Absolutely. I think of Wilson Moon, we call him Will in the book. I think of Wilson Moon and Victoria as being two parallel figures of displacement in many ways. And we don't learn right away, but she eventually figures out that he is actually a Native American. I certainly couldn't tell a story about displacement in the American West without including in some way the indigenous experience, because obviously if as tragic as it was for the people of Iola, the ranchers and the farmers, to be displaced from their homeland, certainly well before that was the tragic displacement of the Native American people from that exact same land. And so there's layers of displacement on that land that all lies beneath the lake. And so I wanted to bring in Wilson Moon to allude to that story. But on another level, I didn't feel like Wilson Moon's story was mine to tell in a lot of ways. And so I bring Wilson Moon and Victoria together on the first post after the prologue, the very first lines of the book. And in that way, the book does open as a bit of a love story, but then it evolves to kind of examine love in the most expansive way. Wilson Moon and Victoria's relationships becomes a very important, it changes both of their lives forever after they meet. But then the book expands into not just love of these two young people, but love of the land, love of self, love of the peach orchard. And so Wilson Moon, who ancestrally would have been more tied to the land even than Victoria, that the land meant everything to his people, but because his ancestors had been displaced over and over again, and then Will literally pulled away from his family. And so in a lot of ways, Wilson Moon is the character who is sort of now too, quote unquote, white to go back to his reservation, but still too Indian to fit into white culture. And so basically, he becomes a child of nowhere. So Victoria Nash is very rooted in her place. Wilson Moon is sort of denied that ability to be rooted in a place. And I don't shy away from the racism that informed that entire situation for Will, but also that he ended up facing. I would never say that all of the people in Iola, Colorado were racists, but certainly in 1948 and rural Colorado, I think there was a lot of inherited prejudice. And so I didn't shy away from the racism in the book. I thought it was important to include that.
Yeah, but and although this takes place in a historical setting, it's from the 40s up to the 70s, I couldn't help but thinking about the today's situation of migrants and so many people in exile or within migration. I mean, is this written to that backdrop?
Yeah, I ended up channeling so many of the things that I care most about into this novel. Not intentionally from the beginning, but we can talk a little bit later about how long it took me to write this book, which was a very long time. And over time, as the characters really revealed themselves to me and as the story became more clear, that's where sort of the depth and the heart and soul of the novel evolved. And I found myself just pouring into it the things that really matter the most to me. Place certainly matters so much to me. And then by association, displacement. And so, of course, this the pain that we see in the people of Iola having to leave their land, that is a very common human story, people being forced off of their land in a wide variety of ways. And I think it is one of the most fundamental human sadnesses, where you can't stay where your heart wants to stay. And by telling, I think, the very human story through these characters, maybe it'll give people more compassion for those certain situations. Yeah.
And the place specifically in this novel is Colorado and the Blue Mountains, which is part of the Rocky Mountains. Tell us a little bit about this place, because it's also your place, right?
It is very much
you,
my
place.
As
you said, your family and what's your surroundings like?
Oh my goodness.
At home?
Yes, it's very much about my place. So most of the novel is set in the Gunnison River Valley, which is my valley. I have made my home there. I live at 2,800 meters elevation, high in the Rocky Mountains. And that wild landscape, it really just means everything to me. I love to, hike and climb big mountains and rock climb and ice climb and ski and all of the things that you can imagine would really define life at that elevation high in the Rocky Mountains. I love it with my whole heart and soul. It really is a wild landscape is really the only place that life and existence makes full sense to me. And I have learned my best lessons about myself and about how to live my best life in those landscapes. And so as I'm telling Victoria's story, it was very natural for me to, at one point in the book, I sort of cast her out into the wilderness and she has to survive there. But one of the reasons I did that is that I know how instructive a wild place can be. It can teach us humility. It can teach us empowerment. It can teach us how strong and capable we really are. And so, I really love the portions of the novel that are set in the wildest landscape. That was actually the easiest part of the book for me to write because I have been in that landscape my whole life. I've been attending to the detail of that landscape and have been writing about it in my journal or in whatever way. I think it is one of the strengths of the book, and I think it's one of the things that sets it apart, maybe, from other novels.
And surprisingly, this is your debut novel, but you make this debut out of a very long experience with writing and also teaching. Yes. within literature and creative writing.
Yeah, yeah. So my journey to publishing this novel has been long. I set out to be a writer as a child. I knew absolutely as a child and as a young woman that I was meant to be a writer. At my university, I studied creative writing and literary studies and also journalism. I went on to do an MFA, Masters of Fine Arts in Creative Writing. As a young woman, I knew this was what I was going to do. And yet, also at 22 years old, I was awarded a teaching fellowship as a graduate student, helped me to pay for school, and I really fell in love with teaching. I just loved connecting with my university students, and I thought it was a really great way to affect positive change in the world by working with young people and helping them discover their talents and their passions. And so I ended up teaching for almost 30 years. And also in that time, I became a mom and to my two wonderful children. And I found myself dedicated more and more to those things and writing less and less. And so, yeah, I wrote for magazines a little bit. I wrote some poetry. I never imagined writing a novel, actually. I had written short fiction when I was younger. It's a mystery. It's a beautiful mystery. Where do stories come from? Where do the characters come from? The whole creative process to me is a beautiful mystery. I don't know why suddenly this character of Victoria Nash started in my imagination, but once she did, I couldn't get rid of her in a way. I really was too busy to write this book. And yet, I started really coming to love this character of this young woman who has no idea how strong she is when the novel opens. And I started imagining her place in Iola. I started imagining that story. I started doing some research around exactly how that all happened.
Do you think she is strong already in the beginning of the story?
I think she is, but she has no idea of that. And I think that's true for a lot of us, especially I think for women, that we are so much stronger than we know we are. We have the ability to bear the seemingly unbearable. We have strength and resilience inside of us that we might not know is there until it's put to the test. And so Victoria, at the beginning of the book, is very obedient. She tries every day to do the right thing, but I think she doesn't define that for herself. She allows the men in her life to define that for her. I think that's a fairly common story for women, and that it often takes us a little longer and we have to fight sometimes a little harder to really discover who we are for ourselves. And so poor Victoria really has to face a wide variety of very difficult challenges, very difficult decisions. She's faced with grief and loss. And in that way, she discovers her strength. That does parallel in many ways my own journey. Mm-hmm. And I chipped away at this book little by little for about 12 years. And in that time, I myself had a lot of loss and grief, a very difficult family loss and challenges. I had a difficult illness. I discovered a lot about my own strength and resilience in that time. I discovered a lot about my own wisdom in that time. And I channeled all of it into the book. And so even though it took me quite a while to write it, the character of Victoria, the story itself, became much richer for that time. And I think it all was perfect. I think I could not have written this book as a younger woman. And in 2018, I took early retirement from teaching. I basically quit my job in order to finish this novel. And it was very scary to do so. Financially, it was a huge leap for my family. But I felt at that point that the novel really needed to be finished. And I really needed to shift my life to stop being a teacher and to focus on being the writer that I always wanted to be.
And I guess that it's by the end of these 12 years that you write something that comes up in the end of the novel. I won't spoil anything, but we follow the thought strain of Victoria, and one of her learnings is that about becoming is that it takes time.
Yes, yes. I'm so glad you pulled that line out. It's actually one of my favorite lines from the book. It's simple, and yet to me, it's an idea that that maybe someone can understand as an idea, but you don't really understand it until your own life, your own becoming, takes the time that it needs in order to truly discover who you are. So yes, the thing I learned most about becoming is that it takes time. In a way, that's what this whole book is about, is the way in which we become ourselves through the challenges, through the discoveries, through the difficult choices. And I think that in that way, there's a lot of empathy and compassion and generosity in the book, at least I hope so, to say to other human beings, you know, it's hard. It's hard to be a human being. We all carry grief. We all carry loss. We all are up against some challenge. Also to help people understand that there's always hope, even in the most difficult situations, because we are stronger than we know we are. So I think those really end up being some of the most fundamental universal themes of the book that really just try to say, you know, this is a very human story. And Victoria, she's imperfect in the way in which we all are imperfect, but she discovers her best qualities over time.
I'd like to go back to what we talked about in the beginning about the importance of place, because you just, am I right that you just come back from a workshop in Florence,
yes,
Italy?
Well, yes.
I read about on your webpage.
Yes,
it sounds
yes.
like the most wonderful thing. You have conducted
yes,
it, right?
Yes, so I teach a lot yeah. about how to write about place.
Just want to tell everyone the name of this workshop, because it was Writing on the Threshold. Writing on the Threshold, att skriva på tröskeln in Swedish, exploring the intersection of self and place,
yes,
alltså
right.
att undersöka korsningen mellan jaget och platsen. So this is pretty much what your book is about,
yes,
right?
Yes, isn't it though? Yes, and it could be taught.
Where do you start if you want to investigate your connection to the place, between self and place?
Yes. Well, interestingly, I think we all have it. So I have it rather uniquely and particularly deeply because I am five generations from one place. So I value that. I think I have it very deeply. But everyone I talk to, even people who move around a lot and don't have a sense of ancestry or of homeland, almost everyone I know has a place in their life where they feel most comfortable, where they feel most alive, somewhere that means so much to them.
A physical place.
A physical place, yes, a physical place. I am speaking of a physical place. And so when I teach writing workshops, or when I was teaching my university students writing about place, some of them would tell me, oh, you know, I've moved all over, I don't have that. But after a bit of conversation, I find out, oh no, you do have that. I think it's very fundamental to human existence that, you know, Victoria says nothing matters so much as where you come from. And that might be true for some people. But other people, maybe it just matters where you feel connected, you know, where you feel connected. Because I think you can learn a lot about yourself when you call up your most sacred places, your places that you love so much. The next question for my students always is, okay, well, let's unpack that a little bit. Why do you love it so much? What does it feed in you? What does it ignite in you? And some of my students' best writing comes from tapping into that deeper place inside of themselves that is connected to a place in the world. And it's interesting teaching that for people who are visiting a place, because when you're new to a place, or when you're just a traveler, you know, some aspects resonate with you more than others. Or when you're traveling, some places really get into your heart and others not so much. And I love to ask the question of, well, why is that? And it really does create some really rich writing for my students, usually around careful attention to detail, which is, I think, what people really like about the wilderness and the nature writing in the book, is that I can evoke the very unique and tiny and specific details of my landscape. And I try to encourage my students to see in a very careful way the details of place that matter to them. And no two students will see a place in the same way, which I really love that as well.
You write about the wild nature in a historical setting. I mean, it's not that long ago, but still, you also write about how the landscape changes due to this building of the dam. So would I experience the same kind of landscape if I came to the Blue Mountains today as the ones you describe in the novel?
Yeah, you know, thankfully, you would. And I think that's a real testament to the preservation efforts in my valley. I am not unique in my passion and love for wild landscapes. We are lucky enough to have a population who have fought really hard to try to preserve the wilderness. And also, it's actually a very unique partnership in some ways between the ranchers, the people who have been cattle ranching that land generationally for, you know, hundreds of years, or a couple hundred years, who it was very important to those ranching families to keep those ranches as big open spaces as opposed to condominiums for this ski area. And then also environmentalists, who can be thought of as more kind of hippies and people who are tree huggers, and that type of environmentalist generally is a different kind of person than a rancher, who can be a little bit more of a conservative person politically. But we have a very unique partnership in our valley where those two groups have come together to try to protect as much land as possible. And the Big Blue Wilderness, which I talk about, we have Blue Mesa Reservoir, we have Big Blue Creek. That whole area was designated as a wilderness area. It's called Uncompahgre Wilderness now, in honor of the Ute Indian people. But that land is untouchable. It is wilderness area that you can walk through, but you can't do anything else to it. So yeah, it actually would look exactly like it did when Victoria was there. The Blue Mesa Reservoir, on the other hand, it still remains rather controversial. And interestingly, the reason for that reservoir was for we had many reservoirs made in the American West in the 1950s and 60s, because really there was not enough water to develop the American West to the degree that we have. And so a lot, whereas the wild landscape that you ask about has remained very much wild and very much the same that it's always been, there's a controversy around should the Gunnison River have been dammed in the first place. And so a lot of people see it as just a beautiful lake, but it really is a choked river. And someone asked me or pointed out in one of our meetings that the wild river will eventually reclaim itself, that wild rivers will outlast the dam. You know, the dam currently is very strong, and the Blue Mesa Reservoir is very wide. But, you know, 100 years from now, 200 years from now, who knows? They pointed out to me not to worry, that geological time and the earth has its own time frame, and that the river will probably outlast the dam. And I had never thought of it in those terms, but it really does show you the power of wilderness.
Yeah. It's comforting. Yet what starts off as a disaster for Victoria, it actually in the end turns out to be maybe her saving.
Yes.
The fact that she needs to move.
That's right. You know, it was so interesting because doing the research for what was the story of Iola, what did it feel like for those people? What I found for most of them is it was heartbreaking. It was a terrible tragedy to have to leave their land because of circumstances that we won't reveal, because we're trying to avoid spoilers. Victoria is in a unique moment in her life where she, there's a line, it says she longs for erasure. She wants to go. And I kind of wanted to tell that story because I thought the easier story would be the story of the heartbreak. But what would compel someone to want to leave their homeland? That was a story that I wanted to tell through Victoria. And readers will just have to wait and see. But also then she has the challenge of she wants to leave, but she will not leave the peaches. So,
And she learns how to go as a river.
Yeah, she learns to go as a river. So the title of the book really becomes the primary metaphor of the book. Wilson Moon says to Victoria early on that he will go as a river. And she sort of pretends that she knows what that means, but she has no idea what that means. And the entire novel, in a way, leads Victoria toward being able to finally answer that question. You know, rivers, if you think of them, they have so much to teach us about how to continue to flow forward no matter what. And, you know, a wild river, it goes, you know, up and over and around and under obstacle. It will carve new banks if necessary. It will do anything to continue to flow forward. And to me, I find that a powerful metaphor for our own lives, that we have to find a way to keep moving forward, even amidst challenge or obstacle. And so that becomes the primary metaphor for the book.
It is a wonderful story. It's a rich story that you carry with you. You have carried it for 12 years.
Yes, so, I have.
So we will take it from here.
I love that. I really do. I've been so appreciative of readers who tell me that it really gets in their heart and that they'll remember, you know. That's a writer's dream, to be told that.
And now you get to travel the world talking about the book as well. And this is your first time in Sweden, I believe.
It is my first time in Sweden. I'm so grateful to be here. I really want to get out into the islands. I've been, as you say, I've been in Florence. I've been in some big cities lately, and I need some nature. I really need it. And I already went for a walk today. Before coming here today and just being in the forest, oh, instantly it made me feel better about everything. And so, yes, I will be in the city a bit, but my goal is to get out on some of the islands and just walk and look at the sea.
I hope you get to see some of our places before you get back to yours in Colorado, where this story also takes place, Go as a River. Shelley Reed, I'm so glad you stopped by on your European tour and talked to us today. Thank you so much.
I'm so grateful. And thank you to all of your readers for reading my book. It's amazing. Thank you.
Komna så här långt i avsnittet Samtal om böcker så tänker jag att vi har med oss den som gillar de här böckerna, Dit floden för dig och Där kräftorna sjunger, som vi också kommer att prata om i början. Och Johanna Stenius, det var lite det uppdraget du fick också, att hitta fler böcker som kan passa oss som gillar de här. Ska vi säga att det är coming of age-böcker?
Ja, eller liksom hitta sig, inte bara coming of age tycker jag, utan hitta sig själv kanske. Starka kvinnoöden. Kvinnor som hittar sig själva ibland genom svåra umbäranden, kan man säga så. Som också ofta har en stark koppling till naturen, tycker jag att kräftorna sjunger har. Och jag tycker ju också att Dit floden för dig, själva grundtemat har ju väldigt mycket med naturen att göra, och hon lever ju ensam i naturen, så den har ju också med det att göra. Så jag tycker och vi får mycket frågor på Selma Stories om just tips på sådana böcker. Folk älskar ju dem, och det finns ju verkligen en hel massa superstarka böcker som har lite liknande tema som jag gärna berättar mer om.
För du är ju redaktör på Selma Stories. Det
exakt.
Var jag kanske inte tillräckligt tydlig med.
Nej, men nu sa jag ju det.
Och du har ju alltid så himla mycket bra boktips, så får höra vad du har med dig idag då.
Ofta när folk frågar mig om tips på just den här typen av litteratur, så brukar de allra första författaren jag kommer på brukar vara Kristin Hanna. Det har blivit otroligt starka hennes senaste titlar som har kommit på svenska. Och de två är De fyra vindarna och Himmel över Alaska. Båda de är helt fantastiska romaner med väldigt starka och ofta väldigt brutal handling, men som ändå har ett inkapslat ljus, kan man kanske säga någonstans. De fyra vindarna, den handlar ju om torka, en kvinnas kamp i skuggan av en stor torka, en naturkatastrof som hände på 1930-talet. Och den är mörk, verkligen, och dramatisk och helt omöjlig att lägga ifrån sig. Och den andra, Himmel över Alaska, det är en lite mer episk roman som handlar om ett helt liv. En tjej som är 13 år när romanen börjar, med att flytta med sin familj till Alaska på grund av att hennes pappa helt enkelt är väldigt impulsiv och bestämmer det. Och satsar på ett liv mitt i den väldigt dramatiska och ganska vilda natur som är där. Och det handlar om hennes liv. helt fantastisk roman. Och man vill verkligen åka till Alaska, kan jag säga, ända sedan jag har läst den. Jag tror det är min favorit av Kristin Hannas böcker. Den är helt otrolig.
Det är en del från USA, just den här typen av kvinnor i vildmarken.
Ja, men det som finns verkligen
i den genren.
Kvinnor i vildmarken. Jag har en till här, Kvinnor i vildmarken, fast det är i Kanada. Och det är en bok som heter Coyote av Gabrielle Filtoshiba, som ganska nyligen kom ut på svenska. Den handlar ju just också om det. Den handlar om Rafael, som är viltvårdare och lever i en husvagn ute i skogen i Quebec. Och hennes liv och hennes grannar, som ju är vilda djur. Och hon hamnar i kamp med en tjuvjägare. Otroligt dramatisk bok, helt fantastisk läsning för de som gillar just Där kräftorna sjunger, skulle jag vilja säga. Och dessutom är författaren ett väldigt spännande liv. Hon har själv lämnat allt för att flytta ut i skogen. Så det finns en stark verklighetskoppling i den här boken som är spännande att tänka på när man läser. Så den vill jag också varmt tipsa om, apropå då leva i vildmarken. Coyote av Gabrielle Filtoshiba. Och den tredje jag ville tipsa om, tycker jag, inte kanske lika mycket stark koppling till naturen, men stark koppling till det här vildmarken och det hårda livet och umbäranden, och väldigt samma typ av stämning, tycker jag, lite som Edith Floden för dig. Och det är ju allt jag fått lära mig av Tara Westover, som ju har varit enormt hyllad över hela världen. Många har säkert hört talas om den. Och den handlar ju om författaren Tara Westovers egen uppväxt, där hon i en sektfamilj. Ja, det var en helt onormal uppväxt där hon helt enkelt skulle förbereda sig för domedagen istället för att gå i skolan. Och att det är en verklig berättelse gör det förstås ännu mer spännande, men man blir också väldigt uppslukad av hennes öde som av en roman. Och jag tycker också att den har mycket som liknar i tema och stämning det som finns i Death Froden för det, just det här med att vara som isolerad i sin familj och tvingas lämna den och sådär. Jag tänkte också på, om man kommer med ett till tips nu, Dit du går följer jag av Lina Nordqvist, har jag tänkt på i relation till det här som en svensk liksom också kvinnoöde, när man får, liksom, ställs inför det svåraste att förklara sig själv och sådär. Och ganska sorglig. Den här boken, Dit tror du för, är också stundvis ganska sorglig.
Men du, det blir fint. Man kan hålla på i längre än så.
Det här är,
vi har kanske en lista på Selma Stories.
Det finns flera olika listor. Dels med böcker med starka naturskildringar. Det finns också listor för just fokusera just på Där kräftorna sjunger, som är en av Selma Stories största hitböcker någonsin, kan man väl säga. Så bara titta in.
Bra tips på Selma Stories sajt.
Ja.
Tack så mycket, Johanna Stenius.
Tack!
Det här var allt för idag, men samtal om böcker och fler boktips hittar du förstås i våra sociala medier. Selma Stories heter vi där. Och jag heter Lisa Tallroth. Jag hoppas vi hörs snart igen. Hej så länge!
Du har lyssnat på Samtal om böcker, en podd från Selma Stories.
Podplay.